We're learning about Eastern equine encephalitis here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is an extremely rare but serious and often fatal infection that causes inflammation of the brain. That's the encephalitis part. It's spread by the bite of an infected mosquito. And 1 week ago, state health officials confirmed that a woman in her 60s in Chippewa County died after contracting a case of Eastern equine encephalitis, or Triple E. What do you want to know about its risk and transmission? Do you have horses? Have you vaccinated them against this mosquito-borne disease? It's 800-642-1234. Kristen Bernard is a professor of veterinary biology in the Department of Pathobiological Sciences at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Her expertise is in zoonotic viruses. That's the germs transmitted between animals and people. She investigates mosquito-borne and tick-borne viruses. Kristen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So the woman in Chippewa County was the first human to die from Eastern equine encephalitis this year here in Wisconsin, second to contract it. Can you tell us about how this affects humans?
Yes, it's a very serious disease, as you mentioned, and it's transmitted by mosquitoes, a very particular mosquito that's in that area of Wisconsin. And the virus, some people don't show any clinical signs when they, or any symptoms at all, but those people that get the disease actually can have very severe infection of their brain. And then, as you mentioned, it's often fatal. About a third of the people die that actually get the brain infection. And then those people that do survive often have long-term problems.
How does this get into mosquitoes in the first place?
Yeah, great question. It's transmitted in a cycle, and that cycle is between mosquitoes and birds, and wild birds. And the mosquito feeds on an infected bird and picks up the virus. Then it replicates undergoes all of its life cycle in that mosquito. That takes a little bit of time, but then it's able to then transmit it to another bird through its bite.
Does the mosquito also transmit it? Can it spread it to other things than humans? I mean, horses, of course, are in this as well.
Yes, so it definitely can. There are different types of mosquitoes. So the mosquito that really cycles the virus very well likes to feed on birds most. But then we have some mosquitoes that will feed on both birds and mammals. And those are the ones that we worry about the most. And they can infect any mammal that they feed on. But the only ones we see disease on, as far as mammals go, really are horses and people.
And horses have an injection for this, I understand, that there is.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the horses have, we can use vaccines that are approved for horses. And it's what we call a core vaccine. It's a vaccine that every horse owner should use. And we ask them to use it in the spring before the mosquito season every year. So it's not just a one-time vaccine. You have to give it every year. And in areas like in Florida, where we have mosquitoes all the time, they'll give it at least two times a year and sometimes even more.
Oh, so these boosters can come more frequently if the horses are in an area where the infection is a higher risk.
Yes, and where the mosquitoes are feeding all year. So fortunately, in Wisconsin, we do have some cold weather that kills off our mosquitoes. So it's dependent on where the mosquito can, how frequently they can bite and if they bite all year long or not.
So I understand the Gulf Coast is particularly at risk. Gulf Coast states where those mosquitoes fester much longer in the year. The East Coast as well. How is this getting to Wisconsin?
Yeah, so we have a focus here in Wisconsin as well. So yes, you're absolutely right. Those states are most affected. But we have a focus up here in the upper Midwest, including Michigan has a focus of virus and activity. And in Wisconsin, we have a focus of virus activity. And really, it's dependent on that mosquito vector that we talked about earlier. If you have the habitat for that mosquito vector and it's present in that habitat, then you're at risk for Eastern equine encephalitis.
And so if you have full-blown EEE, even if you survive it with this inflammation of the brain, can you fully recover? There is no vaccine for humans.
There's no vaccine for humans except for, actually, there is an investigational one that researchers use, but there is none that are for the public. And it's very difficult to recover if you do get that encephalitis form. People have really long-term difficulties with seizures and memory loss and sometimes in coordination. So it is a problem, and there's no treatment for either the long-term problems nor for the actual active inflammation.
I don't understand. If there is a safe and effective vaccine for horses, why can't we make one for people?
That's a million-dollar question when it comes to vaccines. And really, it comes into we definitely could. You know, we have the scientific knowledge to be able to do it. And it comes to the point of whether or not the pharmaceutical companies can make it worthwhile, I suppose we can say, for them to actually develop this vaccine. Then we have questions on who would receive it. And every vaccine, there are some side effects that can happen. So should we immunize everyone in the country for a very rare disease? Should we immunize everyone that's in Wisconsin in the northwest corner? You know, so there starts to come into some very difficult questions, and sometimes it's monetary questions as well. You know, yes, we could make this available, but it would cost us so much for the very few people that would need it that it's not worth the while.
Does it have the same devastating effect in horses?
Yes, it's very deadly for horses as well. The mortality rate is actually even higher. It's about 90%. If a horse gets the brain infection, and about 90% of those horses will die.
We're talking with Kristen Bernard, who is a professor of veterinary virology at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She's an expert on zoonotic viruses, which are transmitted between animals and people. We're talking about Eastern equine encephalitis. Do you know about this? What about horses? Do you have them? Have you vaccinated them against this disease? What about illnesses from ticks and mosquitoes? What do you want to know about transmission? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's take a call now. Rita is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Rita.
Good morning. What a beautiful day in Wisconsin. I just recently befriended some friends in my apartment complex, and the gentleman had contracted West Nile virus through a mosquito 3 years ago and is in the recovery process. And there was so few instances of it, they traced it, part of it, to birds in Minnesota. So, yeah, I'll hang up, and if she wants to talk about that as well.
Rita, thanks. Can you, Kristen, give us an update on West Nile?
Yes. Yeah, so West Nile is, as probably everybody has heard about, is also transmitted between birds and mosquitoes. Different mosquito. So we find West Nile throughout the state of Wisconsin. At least you are at risk for West Nile virus throughout the state of Wisconsin because it's a completely different mosquito vector. But it is transmitted between mosquitoes and birds, and so it cycles in that in wherever the birds and mosquitoes live. And West Nile right now is not a high activity in the United States in general. We can have years where it will be very, very high. Typically in Wisconsin, we'll have about 10 encephalitic cases per year. And that's the brain infection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you treat West Nile?
So again, just like with EEE, there are no specific treatments. So it's just going to be supportive care. If it's a brain infection, person's going to be in intensive care and get fluids and sometimes even are put on ventilators.
Let's bring in Amanda now in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead with your question.
Okay. I wanted to know if the encephalitis crosses the embryo of the eggs that we eat.
Crossing the eggs of what we eat, Kristen.
Crossing the eggs of what we eat. No, so your chicken eggs is what you're wondering about?
Yeah.
And that's actually a really good question because it does infect birds. So you might wonder if it could. And no, it does not. So that's one good thing. It does not cross into the chicken eggs or duck eggs or any eggs like that you might be eating.
Amanda, thank you for that question. You know, are mosquitoes good vectors? Are they effective at really transmitting disease and virus?
Yes. So it depends on which mosquito, like I've kind of been talking about this morning. Some mosquitoes will transmit a virus, and there's a very specific relationship. So as I mentioned, West Nile will use Culex species mosquitoes and some Aedes, but primarily Culex species mosquitoes. And that Triple E actually uses a completely different genus, which is interesting to us biologists, and it uses Culicida. So they are very specific, and those mosquitoes that can be infected by these viruses are unfortunately very good vectors.
We're learning about Eastern equine encephalitis, Triple E, a very rare viral illness transmitted to people and horses through a mosquito bite. UW-Madison virologist Kristen Bernard is our guide. What do you want to learn about symptoms, diagnosis, treatment? How do you protect yourself against mosquito bites and ticks? Still time to talk with your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Kristen Bernard from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, where she studies mosquito and tick-borne illnesses. A death was confirmed a week ago in Wisconsin from eastern equine encephalitis, which is typically found in the eastern U.S., as we've been talking about, and in the deep south along the Gulf Coast. As of August 25th, three confirmed cases of Triple E virus disease had been reported to the CDC this year. Those cases are from Massachusetts. Let's bring in Kurt now in Marshfield. Hi, Kurt.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I just wanted to say I had a donkey that I had die of eastern encephalitis about 3 years ago. It was a nasty progression. You know, it was the first day we actually thought it was maybe a little ill. It was kind of lethargic. And by the second day, it was basically paralyzed. You could tell it was, you know, aware. And we were, you know, trying to give it, you know, the supportive care, watering it, giving it, you know, taking care of it. But, you know, basically by the third day, we knew that there was no way that we had consulted with a couple of vets, and they're like, wow, there's really nothing that we can do for it. And if it's in that bad a shape, we actually ended up having to put that donkey down. So, you know, it was, I've got a farm, so we deal with a lot of different, you know, veterinarian care and stuff. And probably of all the illnesses that I've come across, and it's a pretty devastating illness when it gets into an animal like that.
Kurt, thank you for describing your situation. Kristen, this sounded very progressive in Kurt's donkey.
Yes, and that's very typical. I'm sorry, Kurt, to hear about your donkey. That's devastating to have to see, and is really so hard when there's nothing that we can do as veterinarians or as owners to help the animal, except for, in this case, having to humanely euthanize the animal. And donkeys, I should mention, when I say horses, I'm amiss at not saying all equids, so
okay.
The donkeys
I was
would
about
be
to
included
ask that.
In there.
Yeah.
And it's very sad to see, and it's such a difficult thing. And so all the equids should be vaccinated yearly. That thank you for telling us that story.
Yeah, Kurt, appreciate the story. Bringing in now Jim in River Falls with a question. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. So I got a couple, more generalized question to start with is, with climate change and global warming, thoughts about spread of some of these diseases. I know, like, some of the vector ticks for Rocky Mountain spotted fever are moving farther east and north, and it seems like tick-borne diseases like Babesia, and my dog just became ill with that over the past weekend, and that seems to be a pretty common issue, as well as Lyme disease. And then I've also got friends that deal with cervids and epizootic hemorrhagic disease with the culicoid midges. It has been a problem in some places in Minnesota now. I don't know about Wisconsin, but and then as far as specifics, I'm just wondering, is there anything for the epizootic hemorrhagic disease that people can do either for prevention or, you know, if it's in a, yeah, obviously getting away from the midges or indoors, but that's not real practical. But
yeah,
any thoughts on dealing with that?
Yeah, Jim, yeah. Thanks. And he started there with the changing climate and what our weather patterns have to do with the activity level of these vectors.
Yeah, thanks. I'll start with that one and then see if I can also talk about epizootic hemorrhagic disease virus. And climate change is very important with the vectors. As you know, changing in the rainfall patterns, that can change where the habitat for the mosquitoes to breed. Also, the increasing temperature. Actually, that affects not just the mosquitoes and ticks, but also the ability of the virus to replicate inside those mosquitoes and ticks. With the warmer temperature, it actually replicates better. So we actually can see more viral activity in warmer summers, for example. We'll have a spike in West Nile virus due to a warmer summer with lots of mosquito vectors. So absolutely climate change, and it's also changing it's expanding where we find our different mosquito species, which then can bring in new pathogens. So you're absolutely right there. I could also comment on epizootic hemorrhagic disease virus. Not very many people know about that
virus.
Yeah,
you're going to have to give us a primer.
Yeah, so I tell my veterinary students about this virus. And it's a virus that affects deer. White-tailed deer primarily is very deadly for white-tailed deer. We can also sometimes even see it in cattle. So we'll see some spillover. When there's lots of viral activity, we'll see it in cattle. And we've seen it in Wisconsin in cattle. It's been now, 5 years or so where we've had it in cattle in Wisconsin. There are no vaccines for epizootic hemorrhagic disease virus. And so the only real practice, and it's not very practical, is trying to control the culicoides, which is not a mosquito, but is another type of insect that can transmit, that does transmit this virus. So that would be difficult to control those midges in the environment, but that would be really.
There are no chemical sprays or any type of sprays that help?
Yeah, I mean, there probably are some larvicides, I would say, so things that kill the larvae. That's not my expertise, so I don't know about, in particular for midges. There definitely are for mosquitoes, and maybe both larvicides would work on both, but we'd need to talk to an entomologist about that.
We're talking with Kristen Bernard, who is an expert on zoonotic viruses at UW-Madison, currently working on mosquito-borne and tick-borne viruses. She worked with the SARS virus after it first emerged in 2003, and she's taking your questions. Let's go on to Kevin now, joining us from Janesville. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. My question is this. How common is it that these zoonotics are able to pass through the maternal placental barriers?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it really is variable depending on what pathogen we're talking about. So when you might be thinking about Zika virus, and that is a virus that does transmit through the placenta very easily, damages the placenta as well as then getting into the fetus. And not really all that common with very many other viruses that are truly zoonotic. We do have other problems with some human viruses, such as cytomegalovirus and some other herpes viruses, but really not a huge problem with the zoonotic viruses that I can think of, except for something like Zika. And that's definitely a problem.
And, you know, as we look at the coronavirus that we're fighting right now, what can you say about that transmission between animals and people?
Yeah, so probably a lot of you have heard about this virus actually did originally come from animals. And the most evidence that we have is pointing to live animal markets in China, where it first emerged. And that we call that a species jump. So it jumped from these animals into humans. And it's not, at this point in time, it's great circulation is happening between people and animals. We have seen a few instances of cats being infected from their owners, some tigers in the Bronx Zoo in New York, and some mink farms in the Netherlands. So we have seen some going back from people to animals, but we have not seen a lot of transmission between animals and people now that this is just so worldwide pandemic happening. It's really just circulating in people right now.
Right. So it is much more kind of closing that loop, and it's not, you don't see those openings between transmission from animals to people.
Not currently. Now, you know, long term, maybe we will see a little bit more once we get a vaccine that's effective for people. Hopefully not, but it is always possible and something that as scientists we'll be looking for.
Kristen, thank you for joining us.
Yes, you're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Kristen Bernard is a professor of veterinary virology at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, where she is an expert on zoonotic viruses, which are transmitted between animals and people, and she's working on mosquito-borne and tick-borne viruses. Just ahead, we look at the recent attention around bail funds and how the cash bail system works. Stay with us for that. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.